Today's Sober Friends podcast is brought to you by Pete B. Pete B. felt it was important to support the show, and he bought us 5 coffees. Thank you, Pete B. You've been a great friend to our show. If you're like Pete and you think that having the show in the new guy or girl's ears is important, why don't you go over to buymeacoffee.com/soberfriendspod and do what you can to support us. Give what you feel you get value out of this. Go over to buymeacoffee.com/soberfriendspod. I'm Matt.
Hey, I'm Steve.
Hey, I'm John.
This is the Sober Friends Podcast. We're here for the sober curious, the new guy, and the old timer. We're here to talk about the stuff anyone looking to live alcohol-free has to face day to day, and how we overcame those struggles. We speak for no 12-step group, but we do try to remain anonymous. You're not alone. This is the Sober Friends Podcast. In one of the chapters, and I can't remember which one it was, I think it's the one before We Agnostics, Bill W. talked about, well, what if there's a miracle drug that could cure alcoholism? And science may have gotten us there. So I did a little bit of reading on Ozempic. Ozempic is the miracle, quote unquote, miracle drug for diabetes that may help you lose weight. There are other things that Ozempic may be able to do that includes helping you to stop smoking, helping to help you control some cravings or some obsessions. And there is some promise that it could prevent you from having problem drinking. So, and the drug name here is semaglutide. So I'm going to try and do some medical stuff here. I'm going to put a link to the Atlantic article that I'm quoting from. The article is, did scientists accidentally invent an anti-addiction drug? So what does that mean for us, Steve? If there now is a shot that you can get and it's going to prevent problem drinking, is this something that is going to cause everybody who has gone to AA or in recovery to go back out? Is it safe now?
Hey, Matt, nice to be here tonight with you. You know, our buddy Tim said it best, you know, Monday night when we brought this up a little bit at our meeting, like, oh, yeah, you're going to give me a drug so I can go out and drink more or I can regulate my drinking. And we all sort of chuckled because, you know, for those of us who came into these rooms the way I came in and the way our buddy Tim came in and the way you came in, to me this seems like, you know, I've been doing a little bit of reading on it, probably not as much as you, but it seems like, first of all, we're way far off, right, from this becoming anything more than, you know, a possibility right now.
It's hearsay now. So it's not been fully studied.
Right.
And the studies that they have, it doesn't appear to work the same for everybody on the addiction aspects of it.
No, there's lots of studies out there done with mice and rats and stuff like that. And they're saying the results look promising. They look promising. And I was just reading an article before we got on, and it said, it was an NPR article, and it said that, you know, cause my first question was, yeah, it takes away the physical cravings. But then if you read in depth, it does talk that it affects your brain, not your physical part. So if it truly can do that, then there is some hope for it. My worry is that it becomes another reason why people stay out longer, right? They're searching for the easy, you know, the other thing that we talk about in our book is the easier, softer way, right?
Right.
And let's face it, if you could take a pill or a shot, that is an easier, softer way than doing the kind of work we did, right? So it's a little troublesome to that. And plus, for those of us who really came into this program and into addiction and came out of a really low bottom, and whatever that is to anybody, like, I, you know, there was so much more I had to work on than just being putting the alcohol away. And my fear is that if I had stumbled, if this was actually a good drug and I came in and I, you know, after my relapse, I'm like, hey, I got to stop drinking again. And I had this drug and it helped me stop drinking. I would have never done the other work which is what changed my life. Right. I would have never done any of that work because I would have stopped drinking. So it's a little worrisome to that. I do think there's a great possibility that this could help a lot of problem drinkers who haven't crossed that line yet. Like, mm-hmm. they're there, right? They're getting close to becoming full-blown alcoholics. and they could take this drug and maybe stop from crossing that line. I think that might be where this is most helpful. Now, again, we may find that it's absolutely helpful. I mean, it says that it stops cravings from not only, you know, like I said, nicotine and alcohol and opioids and all kinds of stuff. We'll have to see if it pans out.
There is so much promise for this drug. I listen to a lot of different podcasts, a lot of non-sober podcasts. And one of them is the Prof G podcast with Scott Galloway, who, by the way, if you hear about his drinking exploits, troublesome to say the least. He talked about it in terms of overall of what this could do to change the way we live, that you take this drug, if another pandemic comes out, people are thinner, COVID coming out after wide adoption of Ozempic could make it less deadly because people are not as heavy, that this could be a miracle drug to get people to eat normally. They're not going to McDonald's. They're not going to Arby's. They're choosing better things. On the other side of Ozempic, of that eating healthier and losing weight, honestly, put it in my veins now. If I could afford it, stick it in my vein directly, to quote Barney from The Simpsons, I would be all over it, because learning a little bit about the drug in the Atlantic piece, it sounds like there are some things that happen to you bodily and mentally that it curbs some of the obsessions. The story of a woman, she started taking it. She was an obsessive shopper. Mm-hmm. She went into Target and walked out with what's on her list and didn't realize that that was possible, that she was picking at this space on her back that was kind of always kind of festering because she's picking at a spot in her back. Mm-hmm. And the spot healed because she stopped doing it. Those obsession of biting your fingernails, of over shopping, that those are things that apparently it can help with. When I look at this drug with the addiction aspect, the first thing I thought of, this is an addition to a recovery program. If I were a doctor, I am thinking of the newcomer, where if we go in the thought process of a 12-step group, the risk that we see with people who come in who are brand new to a 12-step group is there is a normality of relapse. That most people who come in, they will relapse or we never see them again.
Right.
Time and the person who comes in and you see them for the next 10 years, that's the unicorn. Mm-hmm. What if you could say, okay, I'm going to give you Ozempic. To do this, part of it is you also need to see a therapist and have some type of recovery program, of the idea that enough of the cravings are taken away and enough of the obsession is taken away that you have the runway to do the work.
I mean, that sounds like an absolute great plan, right? If you can make that happen, that, and I agree. Like, again, this is, you know, a lot of it, we're just sort of working through this as we talk. That's a great way to use this, right? I mean, it's the same thing, right? You know, nowadays people come into any type of program, drug addicted, any type of addiction, drug addiction or alcohol addiction, whatever it might be. And they go through a couple of things. They go through detox, right? They get detox. Mm-hmm. And then they go through some type of rehab program, right? And basically both of those are doing what you're saying. It's those are the type of things is that they are. They're sort of drying you out. They're giving you that time in between that next drink that hopefully, or that next drug that hopefully you can put some of that distance behind it, in between it, and then not feel like you have to relapse. And now if you can add this drug to it, then all the more better, right? Is like now you have a support system. Maybe it's not a crutch. Maybe it's just another piece. It's just another piece of support that you can have.
Anything can be a crutch. Right. I'm on antidepressants. The antidepressant I'm on also is supposed to work for ADHD. I look at an antidepressant as effective because it takes the temperature down just enough that now you can do the work. Now I can understand why I have problems, as opposed to I am overwhelmed with the problem. I don't even know where to start. I think the benefit here is that idea of I might be able to take a shot that helps me control my cravings and my obsession, so that when I walk into a meeting, it's much easier and I take the risk of relapse way down. And if I do relapse, maybe it's a beer and I have half of it and say, this doesn't do it for me. Right. I'm just not that interested. And it's easier to go back. With anything like this, it is easy to make it a crutch and say, I don't need anything. But I think about, what if I have this, brings me down just enough, I go into a program and I could accelerate the work that I'm doing.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this a little bit, and I don't want to step out of my boundaries here because I'm not a medical person. Although I've done some reading.
I am on TV.
On the brain and I've done some stuff on that. But still, I don't want to overstate my qualifications because there's none really. But it does work on dopamine, supposedly. That's what they're saying. Like, mm-hmm. this works on the dopamine in your brain. And a lot of those things you've been saying, like even shopping, right? Any type of addiction, even if you're a shopaholic or a gambler or a sex, you know, addiction or drugs or alcohol, whatever it is, right? What you're getting is getting a rush of dopamine that says, hey, this feels good. Let's do more of it. You know, so that's the first thing. The second thing is, you're right, is one of the things that they're finding that, like you said, some people is like they'll go out and have a beer and like they won't even enjoy it. And that's an interesting aspect to it. It's like not only do they not crave it, when they have it, they don't even enjoy it. So the next step, and I haven't read, I don't think they've done, matter of fact, I'm sure they haven't done any studies on it, is what's going to happen if you do go out and drink on this stuff. Like if you go out and physically force yourself to drink, like what happens then, you know? And I don't know, you know, they're gonna have to do some human studies on it and try to figure out some of that stuff.
It's very early and yeah. There's a lot there. Yeah. On Prof G, I was listening to it and there was risk for a lot of brands that he felt there's risks in the alcohol industry. If you haven't been paid attention, it is pretty highly concentrated and consolidated. There are a couple of big companies like Constellation Brands and InBev that if I were to name some type of booze, it's probably owned by one of those big people. I think Molson Coors is one of them, although they might be part of one of those bigger brands. But the people who make alcohol, these are huge multinational companies. There is incredible risk to these companies. If there is wide adoption of Ozempic, there is the opportunity where we might all be on this and we're all thin and we're all healthy and we live long lives and don't get cancer and don't get diabetes anymore. That's a pretty incredible idea here. And the idea that we use, maybe those of us who have our brains wired the wrong way, use less alcohol. I looked at that and I thought of all my obsessions, which is if left to my own devices, I would buy a whole bunch of different podcast mics. I wouldn't be able to use them all, or I'd have to rotate them and it'd be kind of cool to have, but you wouldn't notice any difference on my voice really, because I don't need much more than what I have, but I would love to go buy different mics and different equipment. And I love going into Target, looking around. I'd love to have this. I'd love to have that. I'd love to go in Williams-Sonoma. And left to my own devices, I would buy all clad, and I would buy the nicest knives. Right. And I'd be back in hawk like I was in the past. There are these obsessions that I have that are wrapped up in a bunch of different things that, like a Venn diagram, cross over. What if I could live a better life with better mental health with something like this? On top of something to continue working on.
You know, one of the things that you touched on is like early on. So if you could take this drug and then you can lose some weight and you start, and let's face it, if that's one of the things we want to do, you immediately start feeling better about yourself.
Yes.
Right? You start to look better. You start to feel better. So you do. You have this transformation of, okay, you're starting to feel, now you're drinking less, you're eating less. Maybe you start, you know, if you're physically able to, maybe you start exercising more. It can become a totally life-changing experience, right? It can be something that's way bigger than anything anybody dreamed of. So the other thing you talked about there, and again, I don't want to go down a rabbit hole of conspiracy theories, but you're absolutely right. If this drug becomes, they find out that this drug does what they're thinking it might do, there's going to be a lot of big companies, powerful people that are not going to want this drug distributed all that well, right? So you're going to have companies somehow trying to stop this or fight this or whatever it might be, because you're right. I mean, people stop. Listen, obesity is a huge problem, not only in the United States, but around the world pretty much. So, but very much so in the United States.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and people make money on that, right? Listen, we've talked about it. I struggle with it. You know, you've struggled with it.
Mm-hmm.
People make money on the fact that at times, you know, I struggle with my eating. So they don't want to, you know, they don't want to miss out on that. So it will be very, very, it's going to be an interesting thing to watch, to see how this develops. And hopefully it'll develop quickly enough in our time that we can watch some of it happen.
It's funny. We'll have wars over it.
Yeah.
The big corporate interest, because I'm looking at, I don't remember who makes Ozempic. I could probably look back at the article, but I put it down. But there's the opportunity that the people who make this drug could be a bigger company than Apple. Right. They could be the richest company on the planet, because we all get hooked now on this drug because we now live a healthier lifestyle. And the health industry could go into decline because you don't necessarily need as many doctors or as many other drugs, because we are just living a healthier lifestyle anyways. It's mind-boggling of what possibly could be the case. And it puts the pressure on big companies like a McDonald's or a Constellation brand or all those places that are bad for your food. I will tell you, with me, a lot of the bad choices I make are because I haven't planned ahead. Now I'm in a position where I'm going on instinct, and I'm going to think about, you know what? Shake Shack sounds pretty good right now.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
I'm going to do that.
Absolutely. It's a Danish drug maker called Novo Nordisk
makes it. That's right. It's Danish. Bigger than Lego over there. Yeah. That's a big deal.
So, yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what goes on. But listen, there will be a big fight over this. It'll be very interesting to see how it all shakes out. Like I said, hopefully it'll happen in our lifetime, I hope, so that we can watch it happen and maybe see. Like I said, it's interesting, because another part of the big book talks about, remember, the big book was written in 1939, right?
38, 39.
Right. It was published in 39. And they were talking about, you know, they say if you... You know, they're talking about exploring the moon on a rocket ship back then. So
just do that.
Right. And if you ask any longshoremen, they'll say, yeah, I bet you they do. And I bet you they do pretty quick. So you think about that, right? 30 years later, they did exactly that. They went to the moon in a rocket ship. And here you go. In the book, it talks about maybe science someday will make a drug, a pill that'll cure it. And maybe we're approaching that too. So it'll be very interesting to watch that unfold.
This is another great side conversation around this. Where I work, we have huge diversity and inclusion initiatives. Of the things that I am most proud of at my workplace, it really is this DE&I stuff that we live. And part of that is around a growth mindset and psychological safety. And I take some pride that what we do on this show is really around psychological safety. Let's throw something out there and let's talk through an idea that might potentially offend somebody else, mm-hmm. or might be hard to digest, or that we may not all agree on, but let's not shut it off.
Right.
This is one of those things around the growth mindset, is what he's talking about in the book, of let's not shut off ideas. That the time of Michelangelo was probably like the smartest and most talented person of his time. And he was looking at things like flying machines, but he wasn't able to do it. Galileo was able to figure out some things around the heliocentric nature of the universe, and he got shut down by the Catholic Church. The idea is nobody ever really figures out the end idea. It's layered on top of another. Somebody like the Wright brothers create the airplane that is flying just off the ground, and somebody makes it better to the point that we end up on the moon in what, 60 years?
Yeah.
We go from man cannot fly to we're on another celestial body.
Right.
In 60 years.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. It's a great way to put it. Things are layered on top of each other, right? They don't happen all at once. They get layered and they get built upon on other people's work and discovery. And that's the way a lot of these things continue to happen. And one of the things we do well, I know you and I work on it hard, is that we don't shut ourselves off to other ideas, right? No. Is that we've come on to this and into this podcast with the thought that, listen, we don't have all the answers. I have the answers for me. If you're interested in knowing how I got sober and how I stay sober and some of the things that's happened to me since I've been sober, I'm very, very happy to share those things with you. But I can only share what I know, all right? I can only share what I know. I can only share what worked for me. Although I'm starting to see, and I'm not opposed to selling somebody if they come in and they don't want to do AA or do certain things, like, well, then try this, you know? Try this. See if this works for you. And if not, like I was just talking to somebody the other night, you know, I go to the same two meetings. You know, I go to more than that, but the same two meetings every week, Monday and Friday. Anybody who knows me know that they can find me there. My phone number hasn't changed in 20 plus years. It's like, so I'm a very findable, reachable person if somebody's looking for help. And that includes anybody who came in, asked me for help, went out, tried something else. So I'll be here, hopefully, if I keep doing my thing, to help somebody else. But people got to find their own way. And, you know, our way is our way. And you know, there's so many, we've talked about it all the time, there's so many different ways to sort of find sobriety and even stay sober these days than there was 20 or 30 years ago.
Somebody, I don't remember where it was, whether it was at a meeting. I don't think it was at a meeting that I talked to somebody about this. But they mentioned, you know, Ozempic is so expensive, but they give out Narcan like party favors. Yeah. And I said to the person, if I was still in the office, I would probably buy a couple of Narcan and put it in my desk.
Yeah.
I probably would never use it, but it's not beyond the realm of possibility that a workplace where there are 300 employees, somebody might be using an opioid.
Oh, absolutely.
And they might overdose. I might be able to save a life having some Narcan in my desk. So I would want to get it.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I've thought about getting some. I mean, because now you can get it. I mean, the you know, private citizen can go get it. You got to pay for it. It's not all that cheap. I forget exactly what it costs. But you're absolutely right, is that it might not be a bad thing. You know, I was at a meeting, an AA meeting for a regional meeting, and it happens in a club, a sober club, in a place to have meetings and all. And they talked about it, and they were talking about Narcan, and groups were talking about maybe getting some for their group and all that kind of stuff. And somebody said that they just had a thing just a week before that somebody in that club, there was a meeting going on. Somebody went to the bathroom and used in the bathroom and they collapsed. And they had, luckily, because it's a club, they have Narcan on there, available is what I'm trying to say. And they were able to revive this person. So it is something, but it is interesting. You're right. I was reading that I guess right now it's like $1,000 a month for this, for the drug. So
yes.
Yeah. And some insurers have stopped covering it, which is, again, that's not surprising in our day and time.
Today they're doing that.
Yeah.
I think once the insurers see, once the cost comes down and insurance, especially if there's addiction benefits there, why wouldn't an insurer say, wait a minute, if we give the insured person this, they're going to lose weight. I think it was something like 10% of your body weight is about average. It's pretty significant weight loss. They're going to eat healthier. They're going to lose weight. The risk of somebody having an addiction or using drugs or alcohol, which could be harmful and then cause cancer, are lessened.
Right.
That we now have this subject where the chances of heart disease, diabetes, cancer are all lessened. Why wouldn't we do this?
Yeah, I mean, you would do it unless you find that there's side effects that they haven't come across yet.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
Right.
It's still so early.
Right.
We can't have nice things, so they will.
We can't have nice things. Sometimes it just seems like we can't.
I would say with this drug, again, I absolutely would take it if I could. I'm hearing that one of the things that is kind of a bad thing about the drug, the moment you go off of it, you go right back to the way you were before. You gain weight. You get the cravings back. You get your obsessions. They all come back. If you're going to use this, you're going to have to use it for life. You have traded this, in a sense, as an addiction. If I were to go on this drug, I'm not drinking. There's no risk there. And the reason for that is, what benefit now would social drinking have, moderate drinking have for me? I just see none. I have a mindset of, how would that improve my life now that I've learned how to live without it? I don't know. It's like, I never went and went with my friends out to a restaurant and I was the sober person and I was the one who got arrested. The only time that would happen is if everybody else is drinking and I get lumped in with them.
You know, one of the things is, you know, you said you sort of traded this for your addiction if you have to take it the rest of your life. But especially as you get older, and not only that, if you're diabetic, you're taking insulin for the rest of your life, right?
Right.
If you have, you know, high cholesterol or heart disease or any of the things, you're taking that medicine for the rest of your life, right? So I don't think it's unusual, especially this day and age, for people to take a medication daily for the rest of their lives. You know, I don't take medication. I've talked about it, but, you know, I believe it's genetics, and most of it's genetics. And right now I don't, but I live with someone who takes lots of medications. So I know how that is, and they will be taking them for the rest of their lives, for sure, lots of them.
My friend Jeff L., my new friend Jeff L., has been emailing me. He's a fan of the show, and he actually sends some stuff to me. Hey, I heard about your high cholesterol and stuff, and he talked about the benefits of a paleo diet and talked about how there could be a link between statins and dementia or Alzheimer's, which scares the hell out of me. Mm-hmm. So I assume, Jeff, when you hear this, I'm going to get some more information from you. I welcome people having opinions on this, even if they're strong. I just felt this is something that is worth us talking about. Yeah, I'm on statins. I'm on a heavy dose of the generic version of Crestor. It's the first thing that has got my HDL up above 40. I'm on an antidepressant / an ADHD medication because I would be unmanageable without it. I remember what life was like before I was on an antidepressant and what it is now. Yeah. And life is so different. You have to make your own decision. I don't think ruling out anything is a good thing. If the fact that I can take this medicine and it allows me to go through my emotions is a good thing. I have a bunch of plumbing issues in this house, not like yours, where you had raw sewage come flying into your house, but we need a new pump on the well, and I've got a drip on the ceiling because there's something going on with the tub, and that's probably going to be about $2,500, $3,000. That's not the thing that's got me freaked out right now. I've got some things freaking me out, but I think we can get through that. And I am shocked. I have to stop thinking about it because it's going to make me think about how I'm going to freak out about this. But there is something with my program of recovery and my medication and my therapy that got me to a place that I could look and say, we are going to get through the issues with the house. We will figure this out. We will find a way to have the resources and this will get done. 10 years ago, I would be a friggin' lunatic.
Yeah.
It would be awful. And I'm getting through it. And getting through, I'm like, okay, we called the guy, we took action, that makes me feel better. To me, that's a victory.
Absolutely. I mean, once you get to that place, and I remember when I got to some of those places too, where it were big things or problems did not seem to overwhelm me like they used to, you know? And again, it's, you know, if you're a reader of the big book, you know, and the promises, it talks about that, you know, things that used to, again, I can't recite it, but things that used to really befuddle me, now I know how to handle them, right?
Right.
And that's what you're talking about. Like things that used to really make you crazy, you can handle now. And again, that's part of your program. I'm sure that's part of your medication. And that's part of you. And it's also part of you having success in handling previous things, right? Having some experience handling that. Now, you know, like, yeah, the tub of shit. Listen, you want to buy a house? I was just talking about it. My daughter and a friend were over last night for dinner. And I was like, you know, we were talking about, oh, they need a new roof on the house. And it's like,
that was the first expense we did. We had to buy a new roof when we bought the house.
Right. And it's like, we've had a lot of rain up here in the Northeast in Connecticut, and they had some leaks and it's like they had it fixed. And now it's like, and they're saying like, hey, you got two layers of roof on your house. We fixed it once. It's time to just bite the bullet and get a new roof. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, talking about a $9,000 roof or whatever it might be at the time. It's what you got to do. If you're going to own a house, it's what you got to do.
I have two neighbors, one right down the street, the other on the other end of the street, that when we've had this type of rain, they have like the neighbor down the red house must have a sump pump where the water flows out. But when we have those rains, I'm driving by for days and there's water pouring down the driveway. And then there's the other guy who doesn't have a permanent hose. He has like a fire hose hooked up, and it's all across his yard, and it's pouring water out for days after these big rainstorms. I don't have that.
Right.
It could be much worse. And I'd go by them like, oh my God, thank God this isn't me.
Yeah. Now we have a house down the street too. The same thing. Like they've had a ton of work done in the last couple of months trying to divert rain, and they had a lot of landscaping done. Their house is set down the hill a little bit, so any water was running right down. Anyway, but it's always that for me. It's like, you know, I'll talk to my wife and we'll bitch and complain a little bit and then we'll realize like, you know, something that's we're really okay. We're okay.
Yeah.
Number one is, you know, for the most part, we don't have anything that's coming up that's going to cripple us financially, you know?
Right.
And yeah, do we like doing it? No. Would I like spending $10,000 or $15,000 on a new roof if I had to? Absolutely not. But if I had to, what choice do I have?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, but these are the things that we're able to work through that we used to drive us crazy, and they don't have to drive us crazy. And most importantly, that we don't have to drink over them, really, because that was our coping mechanism when you got all that stress. I know it was for you and I know it was for me. If I was sitting there and I wasn't sure, and there was a time in my life where I wasn't sure how bills were going to be paid.
Yep.
I always had enough money for my booze. But, you know, I would sit there and like, you know, something, a couple drinks would make me feel better. And it really didn't help the situation. But at the time, it seemed like a decent way to handle it. And today I don't need to do that. You know, today I have many options. One thing I will say, if you're new and you're listening to this and you are one of those people, you're trying to figure out, am I really an alcoholic? Am I just heavy drinking? Don't let this conversation make you wait, make you like, oh, this is going to happen. Really?
Oh, yeah.
Take your life, you know, in your own hands, make some decisions, figure it out, right? If you have that question, figure it out. You go to AA meetings, you go to some other things, you sit down and tell people, hey, I'm not sure. I'm trying to figure out if this is really a problem for me, and do some work on it, and you'll be able to figure it out, because it can be a crutch, and you don't want to delay getting help if you need it any longer than you need to.
It's just the idea of what's possible. Yeah. Well, why don't you be like Jeff L. and reach out to us? We would always love to hear what you think about our topic. I didn't ask you. I'm looking for our real people to figure out what you like, what you thought about this topic. Did it make you angry? Did it make you hopeful? What are your beliefs on this? Share them. Matt@SoberFriendsPod.com, on Instagram @SoberFriendsPod, the website, SoberFriendsPod.com. Steve, thanks for fleshing out this topic with me tonight.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me.
You got it. And I'll see you next week. Bye, everybody. You made it this far into the podcast. That tells me you're a pretty big fan. If you like what we do and you find value in the podcast, consider a donation at buymeacoffee.com/soberfriendspod. Your donation keeps us on the air to help out the new guy and helps us defray some of our costs. If you find value in our podcast, please consider a donation at buymeacoffee.com/soberfriendspod.